There are many types of headaches. For most of us, a little bit of rest, perhaps a couple of painkillers, and maybe some time are all we need for the pain to pass. For others, the pain is much more severe and accompanied by other symptoms. It's estimated that 45 million Americans suffer from chronic headaches, and out of that group, 28 million suffer from migraines. I'm Kermit Poling, and on tonight's Health Matters, we'll be discussing these debilitating headaches with Dr. Deborah Elliott-Davids, Associate Professor of Clinical Neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport, also a certified headache specialist. We will also be taking your calls this evening at 800-552-8502. Again, our number, 800-552-8502. So, Dr. Davis, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thank you. My pleasure, Kermit. Thanks.
I think most of us know at least one person who suffers from migraines. We were just having a discussion before we got on the air with a whole group of people that all work for me. Maybe there's a message there somewhere, but they all seem to suffer from migraines. We hear quite a lot about them, but what exactly are they?
Migraines are a brain disorder. It's what we call a paroxysmal brain disorder, which means that it comes in attacks. And these attacks can be triggered by a kind of an insult or a trigger food or stress. The attacks cause changes in the nerves of the brain, the cortex, and the pain centers, and that then causes a neurovascular inflammation. And I'm trying not to use too much in the way of scientific terms, but the covering of the brain becomes inflamed, and that's where the pain comes from, we think. And different areas of the brain start to have dysfunction, and they don't work well. So the patient is then disabled.
So what are the, and I'm sure those who experience migraines know this very well, but for those of us that don't, what are the common symptoms of a migraine headache?
The patient will usually start by feeling a twinge of pain, or just sometimes a prodrome of feeling fatigued. They may notice that they have sensitivity to light, and as the pain gets worse, it becomes throbbing. Sometimes it starts on one side of the brain and then goes to the whole brain, or the whole side of the or the whole head rather. Nausea, vomiting, and sensitivity to light, smells, and sounds are common, and the patient doesn't like to move. Movement makes it worse.
You had mentioned some of the triggers. What does research actually tell us, and you briefly touched on this, what exactly is happening in the brain during a migraine? What do we know about it?
We know that this is a genetic condition, but everybody can have a migraine, and some people have it due to trauma. That condition causes the brain to be more sensitive to the environment, and so it reacts a little bit more forcefully than a normal brain.
So what are some of the triggers you mentioned? Food, stress. I imagine there's
changes
probably a whole
in,
list.
Oh yeah, changes in routine, too much sleep, not enough sleep. Certain foods are specifically worse, such as red wine and aged cheese, cold cuts, hot dogs. There's a big list, actually, but those are the big ones.
Okay. Well, you mentioned cold cuts and hot dogs. I start thinking then of nitrates. So do
That's
nitrates
right.
have, are,
yeah.
are they a trigger?
Nitrites, sulfites in white wine, and tyramine in red wine and cheese. Yeah. And MSG, some people are sensitive to that as well.
Right. Well, we'll have to come back to that and talk a little bit about that. We already have our first caller.
Great.
Again, the number to call with your question this evening is 1-800-552-8502. That is 1-800-552-8502. And again, my guest is Dr. Deborah Elliott-Davis, who's a certified headache specialist and associate professor of clinical neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport. Our first on-air guest via phone is Bill from Shreveport. Bill, thank you for calling this evening, and go ahead with your question.
Thanks for having me on. Well, I have a question. Back when I was a teenager, I was diagnosed with migraines, and they tried a whole different thing, system of things, and finally they sent me to an eye, ear, nose, and throat specialist, and they found that I had some kind of severe blockage up in my sinus cavities. I actually had to have two operations to open these back up. So can you explain how that, one, were they correct in that diagnosis? This was back in the 70s. And two, is it possible for, you know, bad sinus conditions to actually cause that kind of pressure and problem that might cause migraines?
Well, that's a really great topic because obviously in your case, that was causing headache symptoms. And it's possible, especially if you have family members that are migraine sufferers, that you had a physical condition that was triggering migraines in you, and that can happen as well. Sinus headaches and migraines have been confused by the lay population as well as doctors for years and years, and so certainly a sinus condition can irritate the big nerve in the face and head. Which then, if it gets irritated enough and you are prone to migraines, then that can cause migraines. Most sinus headaches themselves are simply due to infection or inflammation. If it's a recurrent and chronic problem, it's a good chance that it may be migraine. However, migraine should not, or sinus problems should not cause light sensitivity, and not as much nausea and disability.
All right. Thanks, Bill, for your question. The number to call with your question this evening, 1-800-552-8502. That is 1-800-552-8502. And if you prefer not to actually go on the air, that's fine. Just let one of our staff members there know when you call, and they'll be happy to send your question in via text. But we'd love to get you on the air if you have a question. 1-800-552-8502. I hear a lot about cluster headaches. What's the difference between a cluster headache or a migraine, or are they the same thing?
Oh, no, they are not the same thing, but they are very painful. Actually, cluster headaches are considered possibly more painful than migraine, and sometimes they've been called the suicide headache. Cluster headaches are a little more common in men, whereas migraines are more common in women. Cluster headaches cluster so that you can have them daily for a period of weeks or a couple of months, and then they'll go away completely for a long time. So they cluster, and that's where they got that that name. But the clusters are short. They're more severe. They occur mainly in the eye, and they don't throb, and they cause the patient to have tearing or congestion or runny nose on that side, which is unusual in migraine. The patient gets very irritable and will pace around and be active, whereas the migraineur wants to just lay quietly.
Well, hear also a lot about auras. When
yes.
Someone has a migraine, and for those of us who don't experience that, what exactly is that?
An aura is usually a visual phenomenon. All the auras are probably secondary to cortical activity that's abnormal right at the beginning of the migraine. And it starts in the visual cortex, and so you can have a little light show, you can have bright spots, you can have arcs of color that move. These auras also can be sensory, so people can have pins and needles, or they can even affect the language center. And so they last about 30 minutes, and then they usually dissipate, and then the headache comes on with a vengeance.
All right. If you suffer with migraines, this is the evening to call Health Matters here. Perhaps you know someone that that does. We're speaking with Dr. Deborah Elliott Davis, who is a certified headache specialist, associate professor of clinical neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport. Our number to make your call this evening with your question, 800-552-8502. Usually when, at least for me, when I think of, and people, of course, that I know with migraines, they're all adults. Do children get them?
Absolutely. Even babies have been reported to be able to get migraines. But before puberty, little boys and little girls have migraines equally as often. But then once puberty hits, the estrogen changes cause the women to be more susceptible to migraines, and the boys drop off. So in adults, about 6% of men have migraine and 18% of women have migraine. But the little kids, the migraines can sometimes, they act a little bit differently because their brains are immature. And so the headaches tend to be shorter, and they don't necessarily act the same as an adult migraine. They often have a whole lot more nausea and vomiting associated.
Well, that was, I guess, related to what my next question is, because sometimes with kids it's hard to tell, at least from, you're always trying to figure out, well, you know, something's wrong with my child, but exactly what is it? So what are signs that a parent should be aware of that might lead them to know that their child is experiencing one?
Well, oftentimes the child, like say over 3 or 4 years old, they'll just come in and lay on the couch for no reason. And that's unusual for a kid. So sometimes it's just that kind of pain behavior. If that happens several times, then you know that it's something benign because it didn't lead to anything worse. And it's kind of a stereotypic attack. And mm-hmm. that would probably be. For younger kids, often it'll just be bouts of unexplained vomiting or unexplained imbalance. Sometimes that occurs.
All right. Well, we have our next caller here. This is Robert from Shreveport. I want to thank you so much for calling Health Matters this evening. And why don't you go ahead with your question?
Okay. It wasn't until I was about 50 that I had my first migraine, and I found out that it was from the compact fluorescent light bulbs. And I understand that they are doing away with the regular light bulbs and just going to the compact. So what do I do? Do I have to go back to flame and candle?
I have been waiting and waiting for somebody to tell me that story. I knew it was coming, and you are the first person, so congratulations. As soon as I found out that they were moving to these fluorescent compact light bulbs, I knew mm-hmm. we were going to have a problem. Fluorescent light bulbs flicker, and they're horrible for migraineurs. And, you know, they're all over emergency rooms. So if you think that a migraine patient that goes to an emergency room wants to be there, you're crazy. I would avoid them at all costs, and perhaps
well, I would think maybe that LED lighting isn't quite so problematic. Just speaking now, because we're in a studio with all new LED lights.
Oh, okay.
So, and we specifically avoided that because not just for someone suffering with migraines, but for a number of us, you know, that flickering, you know, can get tiring, if nothing else. So I can understand why someone for whom that's a trigger would really suffer. But maybe
absolutely.
LED
and
is an option.
Maybe so. You know, I'm not a good engineer. But we get the same problem with computer monitors and cell phones and all kinds of things like that.
Well, that's a really good question. If you have a question this evening, the number to call, 1-800-552-8502, with your question for Dr. Davis this evening. We're discussing migraines and headaches. We did have a question that was sent in by text. Leslie from Marshall has had migraines for more than 20 years. She gets a stabbing sensation in her eye prior to getting the migraine. Is there anything she can do to prevent the stabbing sensation from happening?
Well, it depends on how often the stabbing sensation occurs, but we do like to decrease the frequency of migraine attacks in general because they do cause disability. And there's some information that the more migraines you have, the easier it is to get a migraine. So there are preventive drugs which calm the brain down, and there's a few that are FDA approved and others that we just use because of our experience with them, and they all serve to decrease the excitability of the brain. And there are some that are anti-seizure drugs, some that are anti-hypertensives, and some that are antidepressants first, but it turns out they all help with the migraines.
Which brings us to an area I wanted to talk about next are the treatments, and what are the most effective current medications that we have for migraines?
Well, they tend to be the anti-seizure drugs, and it's very interesting that there's only a slight comorbidity between seizures and migraine because they both are paroxysmal excitations of the brain. Depakote and Topamax are two FDA-approved anti-seizure medications for migraines, and then there's also a beta blocker, which is an antihypertensive, and some of the antidepressants. One of the very oldest ones is amitriptyline, and we use that fairly often as well. These things simply stabilize the pain modulation areas of the brain.
Okay. All right. I know a lot of people, this is another thing that we were discussing before the show, also find that caffeine, coffee, whatever their source of the caffeine, helps. And do you recommend it for treating headaches? And if so, why does the caffeine work? What is it that's special about it?
Well, caffeine is a double-edged sword. Caffeine works because the patient is somewhat used to having caffeine, and a lack of caffeine can cause caffeine withdrawal headaches. Mm-hmm. So the National Headache Foundation suggests maintaining 1 to 2 caffeinated beverages per day for most people. But if you do get an attack, just a little extra jolt of caffeine can help. And the reason for that is not actually well known.
Okay. Well, you mentioned a number of medications that you use to treat. What if a migraine sufferer can't tolerate those drugs? What do you do then?
Well, I always have something different up my sleeve, but
this is good.
But lifestyle changes are really important, and the person that has a migraine should have as routine a life as possible to not upset the apple cart for the brain. So, trying to go to bed around the same time every night, getting up at the same time every day, even on weekends, or at least within an hour. Making sure that they eat properly and frequently is important. Actually, people should feed their brain every 4 hours while awake, and that helps. And avoiding their known triggers, learning about triggers, and sometimes using preemptive treatments if they know they're going to be exposed to a trigger, like if a storm front is coming through. Weather changes are mm-hmm. often triggering headaches.
So barometric pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost a cliche. Oh, the weather's changing, getting a headache, but it really is a trigger.
Absolutely.
At what point then does a person? And I guess if you're suffering from a migraine, you probably know this more than I would. But at what point should you seek a medical professional to help you diagnose the problem?
Well, probably at whatever point this becomes a problem in your life. If it is interrupting your lifestyle in any way, it doesn't hurt to get checked out. It's also possible for people to have a migraine due to another problem, just like our first caller reminded us with his sinus problems. Mm-hmm. And so so it's not a bad idea just to get checked out and make sure there's not something else at the bottom of it.
Okay. And if someone feels that it's really extreme and they can't handle it, there's no reason why they shouldn't go to an emergency room if they're really suffering, right?
Oh, right. Absolutely. And if it's the first time that they've ever had these symptoms, then I would urge them to go to the emergency room, because there can be some pretty scary things that can cause severe headache.
Right. And, not necessarily right. just a typical headache. Here's another caller who wanted to just text in their message. They have hypertension. They were exposed to H2S gas. I'm not sure what that.
Hydrogen sulfur.
Hydrogens. Yeah. Okay. Some hydrogen. Yes. Okay. H2S. I'm reading a text, so I might not have this accurate. Was diagnosed with cluster headaches. However, the headaches throb. What else could it be besides cluster headaches?
Cluster headaches can throb. Cluster headaches can even have an aura. So there's some symptoms that. Will march between the two. And if the person has their headaches mainly at night, at rest, and they wake up in fairly excruciating pain, and it lasts no more than 3 hours and then goes away, whether it's treated or not, and if they have the tearing or nasal congestion, eye changes, then it's probably cluster headache.
Okay. What is an ocular migraine? That's another question that's come through to us.
That's interesting. Ocular migraine is not actually a medical term, so it's a layperson's term.
Okay.
So it could mean anything. In that case, ophthalmoplegic migraine is one in which a person has difficulty moving the eyes and might get double vision. An ocular migraine could be one in which the pain is mainly in the eye, but some people also get blurring vision or decreased vision in that eye that could also be caused an ocular migraine. It all has to do with that neurovascular inflammation and that excitation.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening. Our topic is specifically centered around headaches, migraines, cluster headaches. Any questions you may have this evening, call us at 800-552-8502. My guest is Dr. Deborah Elliott Davis, who's Associate Professor of Clinical Neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport and a certified headache specialist. Is there any connection between migraines and strokes?
There is a connection. There's a slight increase of stroke in patients that have migraine, especially migraine with aura. And about 15% of migraine patients have migraine with aura. And the connection probably has to do with that excitation of blood vessels. One thing we do like to suggest to patients if they do have migraine with aura, might not be such a good idea to take hormone replacement or estrogen-related birth control pills, because that also confers an increased risk of stroke as well. So if that is you, then you might want to talk to your OBGYN and get on some other form of birth control because of the increased risk of stroke.
Mm-hmm. You touched earlier in the program, and part of what you just said kind of leads me back to this, that more women than men suffer from migraines. Why is that?
Well, the usual explanation is that that relationship with estrogen, and menstrual migraine is something that's really common with migraine patients. And so that's the best explanation that we can come up with at this time, because, as I said, the little boys and little girls have a 50-50 chance of having the migraine.
Right,
so
right.
That's pretty much what most people think.
Well, what about the we talked a little bit about the medications that you use. What about some of the natural remedies that are out there to alleviate migraine pain? One that comes to mind is the banana peel on the forehead. do they work? And that's not to discount any that might, but is there any relevance to any remedies like that that you know?
Well, cold is always good with pain, because cold decreases the electrical transmission of pain impulses. So cold works. The ice pack on the head is usually good. Some people enjoy aromatherapy. They find that it calms them. Anything that is calming can help. Putting pressure on certain areas, you know, certain contact or vascular points can help, like the temples.
Mm-hmm.
But just basically dark, cool, quiet, cold, that seems to do the best. And then your over-the-counter medications can also help a mild migraine.
Okay. One of our callers, a lot of people sending these in rather than going out the air. Don't feel shy, folks. You're welcome to be on the air with us. Mentioned that they've heard that probiotics have shown some results, that some research shows probiotics help prevent migraines. What do you know about that?
Not a lot, but there was some research that indicated that H. pylori bacterium could be associated with migraines. That's the one that causes ulcers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, if you're sensitive to a lot of these environmental abnormalities, anything that regulates them can help a percentage of the migraineurs. But I think in general, probably probiotics wouldn't help everybody.
Right. Okay. We have another caller. This is Clyde from Nacogdoches. Thank you so much for waiting for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Davis.
Okay. Heard you mention that there's an association of migraines and stroke. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Now, my wife just had what has been diagnosed as a TIA episode. This was actually Sunday afternoon. Spent the night in the hospital. Been released with everything pretty well resolved. But is there? She is not. Does not have a history of migraine. But do you think there is a risk? Or something we should watch for with this developing migraines in the future?
You know, probably not. Usually it goes the other way around. The migraines precede the stroke or the transient ischemic attack. And I think that the main thing for a person that has had a stroke to be concerned with is to prevent another one or a TIA, is to prevent the stroke. And so if there's no history of migraine, other risk factors for stroke, such as hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, are more important, and cholesterol. So I would focus on those stroke risk factors rather than migraine.
All right. The number to call with your question this evening, 1-800-552-8502. You are listening to Health Matters, and we're about halfway through the show. So if you have a question, by all means, make your call. Again, my guest is Dr. Deborah Elliott Davis, who's a certified headache specialist and associate professor of clinical neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport. A question regarding depression and migraines. Is there a relationship? And I'm assuming this means, besides just being depressed, that you have a migraine. Is there something that relates depression to migraines or severe headaches?
Yes, Kermit. Depression is commonly seen in patients with migraine, as is anxiety. Depression may actually be even more common in patients with chronic migraine. Chronic migraine meaning that you have headache more days than not.
Mm-hmm.
And also other pain conditions are associated with depression. We also see that those patients who have had any kind of physical abuse or any kind of abuse, physical, psychological, sexual abuse as children, they can be more susceptible to physical pain. So it's interesting how physical pain and psychic pain sometimes meld in our brains. So that's definitely true.
All right, the number to call, 1-800-552-8502, with your question this evening for Dr. Davis. A question about mixed headache syndrome has come in. Exactly what is that?
Mixed headache syndrome is an old term before the International Headache Society classification came out. And it's been a couple of decades now since then. Mixed headache syndrome simply means that people used to think that if you have a migraine and you have a different a headache that feels different, that you must have more than one type of headache. And that's certainly possible. But once a migraineur, always a migraineur is something that I often say. Just as an asthma patient may have a day where they're just having just a little shortness of breath, but you wouldn't give them a different diagnosis. They'd simply have a mild asthma day. A person that has a mild headache is probably having a mild migraine. And so tension-type headache doesn't have all the features of migraine, but if you've already been suffering from migraines, probably that mixed headache syndrome means that you've had mild migraines plus more severe migraines.
Okay. What about techniques that people can use to help control their headaches if they aren't necessarily don't have medication available or it's not working? Are there some techniques that people can use for themselves to help themselves in that situation?
Sometimes you can, if you have learned how to do biofeedback and self-hypnosis, that can be helpful. Unfortunately, sometimes once that cascade is already coming down the hill like an avalanche, no amount of relaxation is going to stop it. But if it's early, that can work. Trying to avoid the triggers and getting yourself out of a trigger type of situation may help. Once it starts to come, unfortunately, sometimes the best thing to do is just make sure that you have your migraine medicine with you. And those migraine medicines currently tend to be the triptans, and there's a bunch of them.
Okay. Is there any new research? I'm sure it's ongoing all of the time, but we've been talking about certain things that I think a number of us are familiar with, have heard of, but where is research and modern technology taking us?
Research is trying to look at, again, the pathophysiology or why migraine occurs so that we can break it down and find the keys to the lock. And we're coming up with some new ways of giving the medications, because nausea and vomiting makes oral administration kind of tough sometimes. Mm-hmm. So skin patches, inhalers, those kinds of things. Targeting other neurotransmitters in the brain and peptides. You may hear of CGRP receptor antagonists. That's hopefully the new kid on the block. Also, they're working on a triptan that people with coronary artery disease can take. If you have heart disease, you can't use the triptans, and they're working on specific 5-HT1F receptor triptans. Had to show off there a minute. That would allow a heart patient to take them.
Can medical marijuana help?
Medical marijuana has not been shown to help pain very much, but it does help nausea. So there's a possibility that it could help if the nausea is something that's some people have almost no pain and just terrible nausea and vomiting with their migraines.
So why, which brings me to my next question, because you've mentioned that now several times. Why do these headaches trigger the nausea and the vomiting? What is it about?
I think they probably excite, there's a vomiting center of the brain, and so they probably excite that center specifically. And we use anti-emetics quite frequently, and if you don't, a lot of times the patient's just as miserable, even if they didn't get rid of their pain.
Right. Okay. A question in from another caller. And by the way, our number, 800-552-8502, if you have a question this evening that you'd like to ask Dr. Davis. Again, Dr. Davis is a certified headache specialist. The number to call, 800-552-8502, to be part of the Health Matters this evening. Question about anything specifically that pregnant women should know about migraines.
Oh, that's a great topic, because you really don't want to be using a lot of medications when you're pregnant.
Right.
And so the ice packs come out with a vengeance. And we talk about lifestyle changes a lot. You probably want to, if possible, get off the preventive that you've been on. Once you hit that second trimester mark, the good thing is that the estrogen becomes so stable that the migraines tend to be less frequent. And so sometimes they'll go away completely until after the patient stops breastfeeding their child. So they get a respite from their migraines through much of the pregnancy.
A bonus of having a child. that's actually an interesting part of all of this. And of course, you were talking about the differences in men and women and how all of that works. So obviously, estrogen plays an important role.
Estrogen is actually a neurohormone. So there's a lot of brain changes. The brain sprout less when there's lower estrogen, the nerves sprout less and make fewer connections with lower estrogen.
There was a study that was released not long ago pointing out that there are too few migraine and headache specialists in the country to treat the number of people who suffer through them. So you're a certified headache specialist. What got you interested, first of all, in this as a specialty, and why is it important? Obviously, it is because you became one, for someone to seek someone with your specialty to be treated.
Well, I've always been interested in psychiatry and psychology, and pain is something that is similar to the things that people with psychiatric diseases suffer from, in that it's nebulous, nobody can see it, nobody can prove it, but it's there and it's real. And that appealed to me. I wanted to help those patients that had trouble because other people couldn't go in and see it and fix it and prove it. And it's just worked out for me.
And what about the number of physicians in the country who specialize in this? What's the best place to find someone, I guess, is the question. Because if we really are basically understaffed as a country, where do you go if you're suffering?
Well, there's so many people that suffer that most primary care physicians know a little bit about migraine treatment, and that's a reasonable place to start, is your primary care physician. If you've gone there and haven't gotten what you need, you can always go online. The American Headache Society has a Find Your Doctor section, and then there's also another foundation, the National Headache Foundation. Either one of those, you can find somebody probably fairly close to you using those websites.
Okay. A little earlier you mentioned that cluster headaches and migraines can be very, very similar in some of their symptoms. So how is it that you diagnose these? What's the challenge involved?
Well, usually they're not the same.
Okay. All right. But you did mention they can be.
Yeah, they can be. I just met a migraine patient yesterday who told me that they get tearing out of one eye, and that's supposed to be a cluster situation. And you can sometimes see patients that that have an aura prior to their cluster or during their cluster. So we don't know why these things interdigitate, but the brain has its ways that it can manifest stress, and I guess sometimes they flow into each other.
So basically, as soon as you decide, there's a rule to establish A is A and B is B, there's going to be something to kind of break
well,
that
then,
rule.
Yeah, the nice thing about practicing medicine is that patients come back usually, and if you've sort of assumed one thing and that thing didn't pan out, you can change tax.
The number to call tonight with your question, 800-552-8502. This is Health Matters. I'm Kermit Poling. Dr. Deborah Elliott Davis, who's an associate professor of clinical neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport, is my guest. We've been focusing on headaches. If you have any questions or perhaps a comment about your own situation, we'd love to hear from you. She's a certified headache specialist. A question has come in about what kind of headaches would brain tumors cause?
Brain tumors can cause any kind of headache. And if you are suffering from a headache that you've never had before, then you should definitely seek medical attention as soon as possible. So a brain tumor can cause a headache that won't go away. It might start getting worse and worse, and it might be locked into one area of the brain, whereas migraines tend to sort of migrate around the head over time. And so a brain tumor headache would be less likely to have attacks it would sort of come and stay, perhaps, or at least come more often and more often and more often, get more and more and more severe. And it may be associated with other more scary things like numbness or weakness, difficulty seeing or speaking.
Okay. We have another caller calling us this evening. This is Joe from Shreveport. Thanks for hanging on with your question. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Davis.
Yeah, Dr. Davis, I was wondering if you've touched on the fact whether there are certain patterns of migraine headaches that might be genetic or might be running in certain socioeconomic cultures.
Both of those questions has been studied. Migraine is usually genetic. 85% of patients that have migraine have a family member with migraine. And sometimes those family members only knew the headache as a sick headache, but it's usually migraine. So the genetics of migraine are that it is dominant, in which case it does not skip generations generally. And but it has variable penetrance. So just because your mom had a lot of migraines doesn't mean you will have a lot of migraines. It'll vary. What was the other question?
Patterns about ethnic background.
Socioeconomic classes. Yeah. Interestingly enough, migraine is found in all areas of the world and in all socioeconomic classes. It has actually been known since the dawn of man. There's apparently cave drawings depicting patients with headache. And so even though there may be slight differences socioeconomically, it's found in all classes.
Which reminds me of a question that I have, that it's sort of similar, because we were talking a little bit earlier and talking about different kinds of foods that can be a trigger. But in different parts of the world, different places, they eat different kinds of foods, some that have no relationship. Is there any kind of a variance in the migraines in those areas?
I don't know. I've never had that question before. And it's important to realize that there are myriad of triggers
to
migraine.
Yes,
so it's just, you know, a part of each environment.
All right. We have our next caller in. This is going to be Abby from Groveton. Thank you so much for holding on. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I was wanting to know, what kind of doctor should a person go see? Because the ear, nose, and throat doctors, you know, are mainly for, like, allergies and stuff like that. And, you know, it's really hard to tell what kind of doctor you should go see for your head.
Good question.
Well, yeah, it is. And it's just important to remember that most of the primary headaches are brain conditions, and the doctors that treat brain conditions are neurologists. So I would seek help with a neurologist if the primary care specialist isn't able to help you. And most of the time, your general neurologist will know whether or not you need to see a headache specialist.
All right. Thank you for your question. Here's the number again, 1-800-552-8502, 1-800-552-8502, the number to call for your question this evening. We just have about another 10 minutes or so left in Health Matters this evening. Again, my guest, Dr. Deborah Elliott Davis, Associate Professor of Clinical Neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport, a certified headache specialist. And I actually thought that from that question, you know, who should you go see? I thought you were going to say, well, a certified headache specialist from that. But again, that was a field that you specifically have gone into. And why don't you talk a little bit more? I know you kind of touched on some of the research that's being done. Some of it was actually a little bit on the technical side. So maybe if you could talk a little bit more about what's being done in that area.
Sure. We're looking at different areas to target in terms of the abortion of the migraine, taking that headache attack and putting it to bed for the rest of the day. And in doing so, we're looking at the covering of the brain where that migraine inflammation seems to be occurring, and also the changes in the cortex. I mean, it does get very technical. It's just amazing.
Sure, right.
And there's actually, interestingly enough, an animal model. They give rats and mice migraines. So we actually have an animal that we can work with and try things out on. And we do that by causing inflammation in the large blood vessels in their brains, and that causes them to have the different neuronal activity that we know is the same as human migraine. We don't ask them if they have a headache, but...
Yeah, be a hard question to tell.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it really does make me wonder, though, if... I don't know how we would know that, but whether or not animals, you know, like even our pets, you know, do our dogs get headaches?
You know, and that's very, very technical and very scientific. But on the other hand, sometimes I have an interesting story for you, and that is the story of Botox and headache, because Botox is the only currently the only FDA approved treatment for chronic migraine, and that was just a serendipitous type of thing where people that were getting it for cosmetic reasons. They were tended to be women, and those women often had migraine, and they would tell their plastic surgeons or their Botox injectors that their migraines had gone away, and now we are using it for chronic migraine.
Do we know why it works?
We think we know why it works.
We know. Okay.
we think that it inhibits the release of certain pain neurotransmitters, so pain chemicals in the nerves. We believe that it inhibits the release of those.
All right, 1-800-552-8502 to call with your question to Health Matters this evening, discussing primarily headaches. We have April on the line from Athens, Texas. April, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, your last one of your previous callers talked about what type of physicians to see, and you talked about ear, nose, and throat, and I was wondering if there's any correlations between either auditory diseases or auditory abuse that's been linked to migraine headaches?
Auditory abuse. I guess you mean people that are hard of hearing due to too much loud noises in their life. I don't think that itself has been linked to migraine. On the other hand, vertigo and Meniere's disease does have a link with migraine, and there are some patients who get very dizzy with vertigo due to their migraines. Very few patients have hearing problems due to migraine. Most of the time, they just feel that all the noises around them are too loud.
All right, another question that was phoned in. That is waiting online. I don't really have his name, but I know it's someone from Bossier City, so I'm sorry I didn't get your name, but go ahead with your call.
Yeah, this is Pierre. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I do have lots of headaches, and I don't know if they are migraine or not, but I was told by somebody that if you take hot shower and direct very hot water as hard as you can on your head, then it would expand the blood vessels and would relieve the pain. Is this true?
It won't hurt, and if it does, don't do it again. Usually we use cold. Expanding the blood vessels during a migraine tends to cause more pain. So I would say a cold shower would be better.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. We have Dwayne from Cushing, Texas, who's on the line. Dwayne, go ahead with your question.
Yes, my wife has been on Tuflamax for years, like the last 5 years. And the Tuflamax really dries her mouth out, especially when they've upped her dose on that. And it's really causing a lot of cavities and stuff like that. Is there any kind of medicine that maybe is a little bit better than the Tuflamax and stuff that wouldn't cause some of the other side effects?
Well, there definitely are a lot of choices. So it's it may be worth trying a different medication. And then there's some also some medications that you can take, and the names escape me right now, that you can take for dry mouth as well. So so she should ask her physician to address the dry mouth itself, and then try.
See that as a side effect to some of the Tophamex and stuff.
Different. Some of the different medications can cause that. Tophamax is not one of the biggest ones, and so there's other causes of dry mouth syndrome as well. She may need to be looked at to make sure that she doesn't have something like Sjogren's or some other type of disorder as well. But some of these medications do dry the mouth out. Biotin products can help, and then and that there are other medications that can increase saliva production as well.
I was thinking about our previous caller and, of course, asking about whether the hot water, that type of thing. And, of course, when I think of something like that, I'm thinking, well, you know, muscle pain and that type of thing. And sometimes, you know, when you're sore, you know, it just feels good to get hot water on you. Is it common for neck or shoulder pain to trigger a migraine? Is that one of the migraine triggers?
Yes, Kermit. The trigeminal nerve, which is the big nerve in the head, kind of dips down and talks to the neck, the nerves in the neck. And so neck pain is really common in many headache syndromes. Tension in the neck, if that's all you have, will respond well to heat. That does seem to be more muscular. Whereas if you have neck pain from the migraine, sometimes heat might feel a little bit too rough. But I've had some people put ice on their forehead and heat on their neck at the same time. Facial pain and neck pain are quite common in migraine.
So, my next question then is, because we've talked about all kinds of different triggers, is there one that seems to be the most common? Or are they all about the same? Or
the worst one is weather changes, because you can't
really?
You can't get away from them,
right?
and they tend to be fairly frequent. So I would say that's probably one of the worst ones. And secondly, would be alcohol, and especially red wine.
Okay, but, and why the red wine? I understand that's getting back into the nitrates and sulfites and all of that, but why the alcohol?
Alcohol, probably due to vasoconstrictive effects, which then excite the nerves on the blood vessels.
Okay, and then back again to the relating to the food and the nitrates and all of that. Why are those such a trigger? And I think not just for migraines, but I think people tend to get headaches. And anyway, we all, you know, talk about, you know, MSG headaches and all that we get from various foods. Why does that do that?
Yeah. Well, sometimes we don't know. In terms of nitrites and nitrates, that has a vasodilatory effect. If somebody takes nitroglycerin for their heart, even if they don't have migraines, they will often get a headache. So some of those are vascular effects, but some of them we're not really sure.
All right. We have time for maybe one or two more questions. If you'd like to place your call this evening with your question for Dr. Davis, the number again for Health Matters tonight, 1-800-552-8502, focusing on headaches this evening. We have a texted in question about magnesium. Some patients say that taking magnesium helps. So what about magnesium?
There was a study done from New York that showed that 400 milligrams of magnesium a day decreased migraine symptoms if the patient is willing to wait about 4 months. It takes that long, and that's and I think that really does work. Magnesium is important in pain modulation, and many patients with migraines have low magnesium intracellularly. And so if they got a blood test, their magnesium levels would be fine. But in their brains, the magnesium level is low. It's just very hard to get it from the mouth to the brain. Okay. So it takes a while.
A question here from someone that says that they do get severe headaches and they take medications for it. But sometimes the headaches seem to be worse after the medications, like they come back. And what is that, and why would that happen?
Well, sometimes the attack is just outliving the effectiveness of the medication. Some of the triptans will give a patient a little bit of a rush, and their headache will get worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. Sometimes patients simply need to redose because the migraine is prolonged, and then other times they take that medication so often that they get a rebound, and after months of taking the same medication a little bit too often, their brain likes the medication, and it gets a headache when it doesn't have it.
So it has the opposite effect.
Yeah.
Okay. Donna from Monroe is waiting on the phone. Donna, thanks for calling this evening. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, ma'am. I have a question about how closely do you work with Dr. Diamond of the Diamond Headache Clinic? It seems to me I've had migraines for years, and I've studied all of the different theories, I guess, and it seems to me like Dr. Diamond has had to me most of the results. Is that what are your findings?
Dr. Diamond is definitely one of the fathers of headache medicine in this country.
Okay.
He founded the National Headache Foundation.
Yes.
And so he's had a very big impact on headache research and headache treatment and what we know about headaches.
Can you tell me a little bit more, Dr. Diamond, what's...
Dr. Diamond has a headache specialty clinic, inpatient and outpatient in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, Chicago. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your call, Donna, for being a part of Health Matters this evening. We're getting close to wrapping things up here. Dr. Davis, I want to thank you for being part of Health Matters this evening. Well, just in the last couple of minutes that we have here, maybe just some advice that you might have for people who suffer with headaches about what they should do, what they should keep in mind.
Don't suffer in silence.
Mm-hmm.
Do bring it up to your physician if you think you have headaches, especially if you're having to miss work or have decreased productivity due to it. Stay healthy, eat frequently, eat healthy, exercise, and get plenty of sleep, and take care of yourself.
It all makes perfect sense. As long as you mentioned eating healthy, yeah, obviously we talked about foods that tend to be triggers. Are there any foods that tend to help alleviate the symptoms?
No.
There really isn't.
I really don't think so.
It's just...
caffeine would be the one.
And that seems to benefit a lot of people who suffer through it for reasons that we discussed earlier. Again, I want to thank you so much for being part of this program this evening. And my guest has been Dr. Deborah Elliott Davis, who is the Associate Professor of Clinical Neurology at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport, and also a certified headache specialist. Well, health, too. It's all a specialty. And so thank you so much for being here. Remember that Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or a health professional. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance from Wally Derlith, Jeff Bryant, and Daniel Gordy. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation, also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. And if you want to listen to this program later, you can visit our website at redriverradio.org. It will be posted there usually by later tonight or by tomorrow. I'm your host, Kermit Poling. I want to thank you for joining us this evening. This is your public radio station, Red River Radio.